Welcome to the Jazz Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene and beyond. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Tara Minton.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast, where today we're talking to the incredible saxophone player Hannah Horton. Before we start, we're going to have a quick listen to Hannah's amazing track, Keep Walking. Horton, welcome to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Rob. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good. We just started our show listening to your track, Keep Walking, which is absolutely fantastic. Such a great vibe. It's really punchy. I really like it. Tell our lovely listeners who you are.
I'm glad you like the track. That means a lot, because it's always, when I released the album, it was scary for me letting the world hear my original tracks. So that means a lot that you like them. Thank you.
Oh, I loved it. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I love the sound that you have, you know, the tone of your sax, the way you play, the way that track starts is such a statement. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. You don't need long on an intro. Hey, just don't even have one.
Just get to it.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you said that about the tone. Like, the tone, technique, and melody is what I'm all about, really. That's what I find kind of floats my boat. And you can probably, I'm guessing, hear that in my music.
Melody is really important. Like, to the point that I wonder, like, maybe it gets overlooked a little bit. I don't know.
When I was learning, I ended up doing kind of a joint jazz postgrad and advanced postgrad at Trinity, and Mark Lockhart was my jazz teacher, and he said, if it wasn't for melody, then you wouldn't be able to do the improvisation. And melody, he's a great melodic player, and I think that really went into me. To me, I love melody, and I love that if you didn't have it, then you wouldn't have the rest to improvise to.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful way to imagine it, you know, like improvisation being to serve the tune and to have references to the melody, I think, so people know what it is. That's amazing. Mark was one of my teachers as well, and he really gave me, it's funny, he must be good with words, because he gave me the push to make my album as well, when he told me to stop worrying about the things I can't do. He was like, what can you do, Rob? What skills have you got? I was like, okay. So when did you study at Trinity, Hannah?
I can't even remember now. You know how it all blurs into one. I went to Junior Guildhall first on Saturdays. That was like what I lived for, because I hated school.
Right.
The Saturdays was like my day, all day. I got up early. You know, get up early, off you go on the train. Just brilliant. I was allowed out late that night because I might go out with my friends in London.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. This is exciting. Where are you based now?
I'm in Cambridgeshire, just in Cambridgeshire. So I can bomb up and down the M11 anywhere, really. So it's fairly easy with the car to go wherever you need, where you've got gigs. Like, we were up in we were at Peggy Skylights at the weekend, so up to Nottingham and down to London, wherever we need to go.
That's perfect.
Yeah, so I went to Junior Guildhall, then I went to Goldsmiths, and then I ended up at Trinity, which was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
I did joint jazz classical there. So I did jazz with Mark and classical with Gerard McChrystal.
Oh, that's so cool. What a brilliant opportunity. I think it's really underrated, whilst I'm on the underrated bandwagon today. Melodies and classical training, very helpful. Just like get some control of the instrument and be able to make it do what you want it to do.
Did you know Mark also did that? He'd studied classical sax as well.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
There you go.
Nailed it. How do you feel it's helped you being able to have studied classical and jazz?
Apart from being able to sight read.
Yeah.
It's just really, really helped my technique. A lot of people say, wow, you can really play, as in, you know, get all around the instrument, even tone, harmonics just pop out rather than scraunch out. Does that make sense? I don't mean that as a horrible description of others, but I like them to, you know, be a pure sound. That's what I work on. Technique, long notes, and all the melodies. So that's really what I'm into, and the kind of the emotion of music that the pieces I write or the pieces I play give me. That's what I dig. I didn't really come to jazz through standards.
Right. How did you come to jazz?
Yeah, it's a weird one. When I was at Junior Guildhall, I did study jazz sax, but it didn't really grab me, and it kind of, if anything, slightly put me off it, and I don't know why. It just felt, I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel kind of set there. I did jazz sax and classical bassoon.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Do you still ever play the bassoon?
Yeah, although it is in its case at the moment. It does mess up one's embouchure, Rob.
Right, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's a great instrument. I love the bassoon. I guess that's why I do baritone sax. I love the low register.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. In fact, it's an amazing comparison, isn't it? Because bassoon was like Adolf Sax designed the sax to replace the bassoon in like outdoor military marching bands, and he started with the baritone. So there must be a long-standing link between the two, like with their registers. Guess because that's where it all started.
Yeah, and often I've toyed with the idea. I haven't done it yet of linking the opening of the Rite of Spring in on the baritone into something. You know,
that sounds really cool.
I'm not going to sing it because I can't sing. But the opening of the Rite of Spring is on the bassoon. And it was written at the very, very top of the instrument at the time. So Stravinsky wrote it. It was in reach, but only just. So it had that kind of yearning sound at the start of that amazing epic piece. So it would be interesting to try it on the baritone.
That's a great idea. I want to hear it already. I'm in.
Yeah.
So
all these mad ideas.
It's a great idea. Have you, you sent me some tracks. Apologies, I don't already know this. How much music have you released across your career? Can you give us like a little sort of spoken word map of your life and music?
I haven't released much, Rob. It's a bit of a shame. And actually, it's been really lovely the way the most recent album has been received. And people come up and say, well, your internet and your website must be wrong because there's only two albums on there. And I'm like, yes, there is only two albums on there.
Two is great. I think two's not to be sniffed at. I've done one and it took me like 10 years to figure it out. So,
yeah. I released the first one, which had two or three originals on it. Two of them, which I still play a lot, actually, Forget Me Not, I wrote after my grand passed away. And that's kind of the end, often the end of the whole set. We end with that piece. And Stargazing, which I've brought back for the new tour we're doing at the moment. And then I just wasn't really in the right place to develop it and to develop it anymore. I felt kind of insecure and it just wasn't right. And then suddenly, around 2019, something changed and I thought, right, let's give this a shot. And I'd written a few tunes. Then this sounds quite sad, but it isn't sad. It is sad, but it's not a sad ending. So then my dad lost his battle with cancer, which kind of then became, and then we went into lockdown. So I started writing more. So the album that was due to be recorded at the start of lockdown never happened because we all were shut in. Plus I was with my dad in palliative care. And then it took on this new meaning and being. Inside Out, the album, I don't even know what it would have been called, but Inside Out became kind of my thoughts inside on the outside. And I kind of just worked through things in my head and experiences of my childhood and growing up. And that's what led to that album.
Right. And how do you manifest that all in like a writing technique? How much of the music, is it all originals?
I can't remember now. Seven are originals.
Right. Okay.
Out of 10.
That's amazing.
How do I go about it? I generally write at the piano, but I can't really play the piano, but I can do figure out chords and things. So I do a few chords that gives me very quickly this intense emotion. And then that gives me an idea of the past or future or something that then I base the rest of it on. So it's all done through a few chords that then create an emotion in me. Like Keep Walking is about, do you know what it's about? Or
tell us everything.
Okay. So Keep Walking,
this is this track specifically that we started the show with.
Yeah. This track I wrote, I split up with my husband, and this cottage that you can see me in now is a little thatch cottage with a little cobbledy path. And, it was just the time for us to split up, really. We'd grown apart and he packed his bags and he got to the end of the little path and he turned back. And actually, I was looking out this window and I just thought, keep walking. And that was the...
That's a very strong thought to have in that moment. I think it would have been much easier to think like, oh, come back.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a total change. You know, it's going to be a nightmare for quite a few years trying to sort it all out. But so that was where the tune for that one came from. What was the question? I've digressed, I think, Rob.
No, it's amazing. What an incredible answer. I'll have a follow-on question then. You've got your chords. Yeah. Do you improvise to find melodies, or do you write at the piano, write at the saxophone? How does it work in your brain?
Okay. I'm not a natural writer. Like, you know, some people say, oh, I woke up and the tune wrote itself. I'm like, never happens to me. So the chords can take me anywhere between, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours and a couple of weeks to be happy with, like, the structure of them. If the section's A, B, A, does it feel right coming back, or does it need something else and whatever. And then I can write a melody in an hour. The melody comes quite quickly.
It just happens.
Yeah, I play it on the sax. I have this really naive way of doing it. So I sit at the piano, get the chords, then I program the chords into iReal, Rob.
Oh, that's a great idea. Do you set the feel and the like Latin number
then
one
I can
and all that stuff?
Play around with it. And normally it's called, like, if I was writing it now, it'd be called the month and then the year, or number one, number two. And then I muck about with the feels until I'm happy with that, and then I write the tune, and then it might change. So a month later, I might change it into 3 or into 5, but that's generally how I set it out, and that's how I came up with my new version of Feed the Birds. I don't know if you've heard that one.
I haven't, but I love the name.
So it's called Feed the Birds. Is a sad song. I always feel sad when that one comes on the video and I fast forward it. So I thought, right, I'm going to muck about with that and see if I can like it, because I just didn't like that tune. It just made me feel so sad. So at the start of lockdown, in my household anyway, Rob, we started drinking quite early. Did you?
I think everybody did.
Yeah. So we got into cocktails quite early on. So I used to make some cocktails and then experiment with this tune, and I put it into iReel, pressed, I can't remember what it is, something like Afro Latin or something on iReel. And I came up with this really cool groove with it. Then I videoed myself playing it, sent it to my best friend, Western Supermare, who loved it. Was like, yeah, got to use it. But I think she'd had quite a few margaritas as well.
Right.
But it stuck. And that's the version on the album.
This is amazing.
So that was an iReel, you know, it's so worth trying things out, because you can have a set idea in your head and actually experiment, because something even better might come up.
Wow. Such a great thought. I've never programmed iReel to do anything. For our listeners who don't know, it's like an app that plays back to you, like practice app. You know, you can make piano, bass, drums, guitar. I always like to play it on gypsy jazz. It's like banjo and bass, and oh, it's so incredible.
It's a little bit like playing along with a Casio keyboard. It is unnatural sounds, but I practice with that loads, even if it's just the drums or just the bass. That's often how I, you know, settle down for a couple of hours practice.
Wow, this is great news. So you've got a tenor sax, which we've heard on the first track, and you love playing your baritone as well. Have you experimented with the other saxophones at all?
Yes, I started on alto.
Right.
And I do have a soprano, but it's a bit of a rubbish one. But if I can, I don't play those two. I teach, I have some amazing classical sax students, like post-grade 8, and I play classical alto with them because the tone.
Yeah.
Important to me to sound right for the piece that you're playing or the style you're playing. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards the baritone at the moment because it is a new instrument to me. I had one before, and then Selma sax manufacturers got in touch, like the Rolls-Royce of saxes, aren't they, really?
Yeah, very, very sought after and highly regarded.
Yeah, and just over a year ago, they asked me to become one of their artists. So
that's amazing.
I've been to Paris a few times.
Did you initiate that, or did they, if you don't mind me asking? because it's awesome.
They started following me on social media and sharing a bit of the stuff that I did.
That's brilliant.
So they kind of made contact, and then it took me quite a few months to build up enough courage to email them.
Right.
And then I had him, and then it was like, oh, we're glad you got in touch. We're meaning to get in touch. Come to Paris. So I've ended up with this lovely new baritone.
I called
her Belle. So I went over in February to see them, went back in August to have it slightly customized, and now she's here.
Wow.
She's beautiful.
This is so cool.
And she plays great. And
is it series 3?
Do you know what? Sounds awful. I can't even remember. I don't know what it is. I'll have to go and get it. Yeah, it sounds. She's beautiful. She sounds amazing. But I was talking with Ray Gelato about this, actually. I play her with a plastic reed.
Ooh, which reed do you use?
Feels like I've gone to the dark side, I tell you.
I use the Legere ones all the time. I think they're just amazing.
Yeah, this is a Legere signature.
Is it? Have you tried the American cut reed? Sorry, listeners, this was bound to happen.
I have, but I just like this one. I mean, it does last longer than a cane one, but the main reason I went to plastic on Barry was because of the inconsistency of reeds I was finding. And I'd buy a box of 5 and sometimes none of them would sit right. So I did try plastic on my tenor, and as yet I am still a cane girl on tenor.
This is really interesting, because I have tried the everything on everything. I bought a new tenor last year, and it was like all my other times I've changed saxophone, it's been fine. But for whatever reason, this time I just couldn't get the sound right. And on all the other saxes, I've got these Legere reeds and they sound great. And on the tenor, I just can't make it work. But I thought it was me. But maybe it's not.
I think, I mean, Ray and I have had many kind of ponderings on this. And It might be something to do with, so soprano and baritone saxes, they make less of them because they're less in need.
Right.
So therefore, there must be less demand for the reed, I'm thinking. So yeah. Therefore, maybe less control maybe goes into that, or they sit around for longer, or I don't know. I don't play soprano, so I can't comment on those reeds, but the baritone ones have been inconsistent. So
wow, okay, okay.
That's why I try. And I love a plastic reed on that. I don't even have to blow it in, Rob.
Yes. Here we go. Just get straight to it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a geeky conversation. Sorry.
No, I know. I am sorry, listeners, but it's all true. me with teaching, you can just like get it out, start playing, job done.
Yeah, and I think now I feel really happy on the baritone. That's why I'm writing tunes for the baritone, because I'm thinking the next album might be baritone-led.
That would be amazing. There's not enough Barry-led albums. There's hardly ever anything like that.
It's a bit of an unsung hero. And lots of people have said, but nobody plays it like you. Because I play it like the tenor, like all over the register. It doesn't just honk. I play ballads on it. I've written a few folk-inspired tunes that are very sweet and innocent. And you pick up this big instrument and the audience don't expect this little melody to come out of it rather than this big honking, dirty sound in a way. That's what I love about it. I love that kind of, what's it called where that happens? Like you expect something to be and it's totally different.
I know exactly what you mean. It's like a preconception. Mm. Is that the right word?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And lots of people from all around the world come in and say, wow, your baritone sound is great. And we've never seen people do that before. So I thought, right, I didn't realize it was different. It was just what I did.
That's awesome. So, finding something that you're doing that no one else is doing is always a win, you know, that there's not loads of.
Yeah. So I'm really enjoying writing for baritone, and I am getting a quintet together, all baritone, with Tony Kofi. So we're going to have two baritone.
That sounds incredible. What a fantastic quintet to start.
Yeah, quintet.
Two baritones, piano, bass and drums.
Organ.
Organ, drums. Wow.
And
so
percussion.
We have bass and organ, or just organ?
Just organ, drums and percussion.
See, I could have just asked you what the quintet would be and we'd have saved so much time.
I love the guessing.
So stupid, isn't it? I'm just like, what am I doing? Why am I still talking? You're here to tell us.
Yeah, I love the guessing. So we haven't had our gig yet. The first gig is in June for that in Chichester Jazz Club, which is very exciting.
Yeah, this is great. This is so cool. Mm-hmm. When is that gig?
I don't know. I can look it up.
Sorry, our listeners can Google it. If you don't know, it can't be that soon, because this show will probably be out in about a month. So I want them to, you know, not all miss June. The birth of it. That's so cool. How did you think up this idea to have a quintet with two baritones in?
I did a gig with Tony last summer. It was a tribute to Dexter Gordon. It was a legacy event at Jazz Cafe Posk. I'm part of the Women in Jazz media team, founded by Fiona Ross. And Fiona thought it'd be great to put on a Dexter legacy event because she knew Maxine Gordon, who was married to Dexter.
Right.
And Maxine managed him and did actually manage a few other jazz artists to sort out their tours and things in the time. She has some amazing stories, I tell you. So we came up with this idea of a Dexter Gordon tribute, and there were three sax players chosen, Emma Ravitch, Tony Kofi and myself. And so I played, and Tony videoed me, and he was like, oh my God, you can play. He's so cool, isn't he?
Yeah, because, this is so great.
And so he's like, we need to do something. And so I said, well, let's do a baritone thing. And that's how it's come off.
Wow. This is great. What a brilliant start. Oh, I'm so happy about this, about these beginnings. And the Women in Jazz media channels are amazing.
Yeah. I'm normally the podcast host, so it's nice for me to be behind.
I should have known that.
The other way.
Tell us about your podcast.
The podcast. By the way, the Chichester gig is the 9th of June.
Oh, brilliant. That's perfect. That's going to be like a month away. Be right on the horizon when our listeners are hearing this.
Great. The podcast. I do In Conversation With. So we have guests on, and Women in Jazz Media have been hosting a monthly event at Jazz Cafe Posk. So I often have the guest of that on, but we've had quite a few. I've done photographers, sound engineers, had Tatiana Gorolovsky, who is obviously one of the best jazz photographers, Claire Martin, OBE.
Yeah, we've had Claire talking on our show. What a wonderful
Claire's
guest.
Great. She's fantastic. Colette Cooper. And then we've had loads of artists who've appeared at POSC. So Esther Bennett. I had Betty Accorsi on last time. She's playing there this week, I think. So I get to normally ask the questions. So it's nice that I don't have to do it, Rob.
Yeah, this is great. Oh, brilliant. How long has this been going, Women in Jazz Media?
Oh, I think a couple of years now. We must be in the third year.
Amazing.
It's fairly...
Did it win a Parliamentary Jazz Award?
Yeah, it did in the first year. Yeah,
yeah, I thought so. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And it doesn't just do performances. So there's programs for composers. We also have a magazine that comes out that kind of waves the flag for women in jazz media all around the world. So it's a great team to be involved with. And sometimes we just need to fly the flag a little bit for the women.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot for the last 6.5 years doing this show, about how the problem of gender imbalance in jazz seems so like perpetual, because there's not enough. In my opinion, there's not enough women performing. There's not enough female jazz musicians. So then maybe less young students think it's for them. So then there's less, you know, and the problems need solving at every single level, from like primary school through to high school and big bands and rehearsal spaces. And then professionally making sure there's loads of exposure and opportunity, so that maybe in like 30 years, we might have a gender balanced society. Because it seems like it's quite a long term problem. But Hannah, I'm not a female jazz musician. Can you tell us your thoughts and feelings? Because that would be way more interesting than mine. And more relevant, you might argue.
I think the way to, probably try and start the kind of movement for change is just to, it's difficult because you don't just want to say, right, you're a female trumpeter or a sax player, let's put you on, because actually everybody should be on their own merit. Every human musician should be on our own merit. So that's already a tricky one, I think. But then we just need a bit more, not really exposure, but the more you see great female musicians playing, I think it would become accepted more. It's just to kind of repeat, because up until, like, if you were to draw a cartoon jazz, if someone said, oh, let's draw a silhouette of a jazz musician, might be a sax player, might be a trumpeter, probably would be a man.
That's a really interesting exercise to imagine what comes to mind.
I don't think it'd be, but if somebody said a singer, perhaps it could be male or female. You know, they might do the silhouette in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But you could probably say, maybe, I'm guessing this, maybe say the same for a nurse. Like, would they draw a male nurse or a female nurse if it was a silhouette? How would they? But I think it's just the ones who are out there and that are really good need just to be given as much space in media and recording opportunities as the men. Because I think then it will just start to be more acceptable and become hopefully more the norm.
I agree.
But it is tricky. It's hard. And also, in fact, the other day I was headlining at a venue, and I got there a little bit early, and there was like a piano bar there as well. And the singer was a male singer, and he said, oh, I'm singing tonight, assuming I was there on the wrong night. And I was like, oh.
You must have been so annoyed. Those kind of comments, they're so revealing, aren't they? Before you've even, they're like subconscious bias is painful. Yep.
And sometimes if I'm in town walking around with my sax, people go, and I'm with my boyfriend, they'll look at him and go, oh, how long have you played sax?
That's awful.
Like, I'm carrying ridiculous. Him.
Can anyone see me? I'm here. That's kind of, I can't imagine this world. That's what's so horrifying for me talking to you about it, is if I walk around and I don't know, you know, people, I don't have these problems, and it's horrible to imagine that you do for no apparent reason other than gender. What a bizarre reason to be treated differently. It just makes no sense to me.
And then I was speaking to Romana Campbell, amazing drummer. And something that hadn't occurred to me before is that she came up through Tomorrow's Warriors. She's a great composer. She does arrange. She does all sorts of amazing stuff. And she said that she's actually finding that being a female, she's being offered a lower fee.
That is, how can that even be? I know it's a problem that we're in a gray area. So legally, we're very slow to change, aren't we? But who and how, these people should be named and shamed if you're offering a lower fee to a female. That just can't be allowed. It can't even be allowed to happen like in private, you know? I'd be all for outing people who are doing that.
Yeah. I think it's important for every, you know, all musicians to be in it together. And especially if you can, if you've been offered a gig, maybe it's worth saying to another female artist, oh, have you done here? What did they offer you?
Wow, that's interesting. I do a lot of corporate work with some great female vocalists who get paid more than I do, but they're working. It's the arrangement and I know it, so it's fine. If I don't want to get paid less than them, they can get someone else to do the gig. You know, and it's like, I can stand at the back and play minims. Well, she stands at the front and works hard, learns the lyrics, sings from memory, works the crowd. You know, it's like the fee's reflective, but I like that it's up front. It's not a secret. It's not like I found out one day, like it says right there in the email what you're getting paid. But that's like the only situation, I think, where you can offer a different fee and it be okay, is like if it's up front. But the idea of like, you know, on the sly, just offering someone less money, deeply troubling.
I don't think I've come across that yet, but the main thing I notice is if I walk in and they say, are you in the band? And I say, yes, and they think I'm a singer. But sometimes, and this can happen with anybody, I think, when you rock up at a venue. I had this last year, and the sound engineer was tootling on the piano, and my poster was behind him, and he said, oh, if you want to just drop your bags and go and get a coffee. I said, oh, okay. And he said, and I was with a guitarist, and he went, oh yeah, if you want to set up. So he assumed I was just the girlfriend.
Oh, that's so ridiculous. You could probably do this all day and I'll just be horrified with every last story.
Yeah, let's talk about music more. Music's better.
All right. Well, what have you got coming up? What's in the diary? You've got a great gig at Twickenham Jazz Club, which I think will come before this show is released. But I saw that on the website and was very excited by it.
Yeah. So probably what will have happened by the time this goes out is I live near Haverhill in Suffolk, and they have offered me my own club. So I've called it the Swinging Cat.
Wow.
And we launch in a week and a half. And it's going to be like that old style where you have a house band and then you have an amazing guest.
Right.
So the house band is my quartet. And
who
then,
will your quartet be? Or is it a pre-established quartet that are going to inherit?
Yes, it's my quartet, normal. So Rob Statham on bass, Tim Lapthorne on piano. And I have two drummers, depending on who's available. So this one is going to be Steve Taylor. Sometimes it's Nick France, because he lives really near to me, actually. And we have Natalie Williams launching with us.
Okay.
Yeah, Swinging Cats. And then the next one with that will be Ray Gelato. He's coming up. We're going to have the two baritones up.
Oh, yes. Can't wait for that.
We might do a Dexter Legacy because it's his 100-year celebrations this year. So we can
That's perfect.
Yeah. So we've got that coming up then. I am at Twickenham, you're right. Have you, the Jazz Sanctuary? I've never been there, but I've heard really lovely things about it.
Yeah, it's great. It's going to be, I used to live in Twickenham. So it still like feels like home in my mind. It's always a really great crowd. That part of London, Twickenham and Richmond, I feel like there's always a consistent audience of jazz lovers and jazz musicians sort of hiding out down there.
Nice, yeah. And then every month I do a live stream from my cottage. This room actually, we turn into a jazz club. And it's way more than a live stream now. It's a bit like a TV. It's like jazz TV.
Right.
So people tune in from all around the world. So that's once a month and we do an hour. It's called Jazz at the Cottage.
That sounds incredible. What do you do? Are you like playing a gig and setting the whole thing up?
Yeah, it takes a long time. We have like black curtains back here. There's got four cameras. And sometimes we have a theme. This year I've done two tributes, one to Stan Getz, that was great, one to Stanley Turrentine. The next one is going to be
Stanley Turrentine.
Oh, I know.
40 minutes right there. I could do that all day.
I think the next one is going to be, the next one's going to be spring.
Need a cough button for this show. Apologize.
The next one's going to be spring. And then I think we might do an album. I really want to do maybe a Freddie Hubbard album.
That'd be amazing.
So that once a month we do Jazz at the Cottage and people watch from like Australia, the States, Greece, everywhere.
That's so cool. How do you have like a producer that helps you with the tech element of that? Or is that something you've learned yourself?
Well, in the start of lockdown, people were saying, oh, why can't you do something? So we just did a little something on my phone. And then it gradually got bigger and bigger. And my boyfriend, Nick, is such a techo geek that the whole of the dining room table has like computers and we've got mixing desk and we've got like compressors and four cameras.
Wow.
So it's more than when you think live stream and you think, oh, rubbish sound, one camera, can't really see what's going on. This is like, and because he knows what I'm going to do, because, he knows me so well, if we're doing fours, he'll swap in close to each one. Like you'll see the pianist and then it's my go and he'll swap to me. And so it's a really cleverly edited, but on the move.
That's incredible. Like live directing, like a live, like major pop gig.
Recently we got a lighting, I don't know the word is anyway, all these buttons, so we can preset the lights for each tune. Then you press one and it goes purple and blue and then it changes.
Oh, wow, great. That's so cool. I can't believe what's going on here. Hannah, you've got so many things going on here. It's amazing to talk to you. I can't possibly keep up with it all.
I'll have to send you a link to the next one.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I'd love that. And send us all the links to everything you're doing, every gig you've got, because you've got so much brilliant stuff going on, so many brilliant ideas, such a varied and interesting career. And it's been an absolute joy to talk to you about it all. We're going to finish the show with Surfing Thermals.
Oh, yeah. Great tune.
Yeah, can't wait. So this, listeners, this one's for you. Can you tell us quickly what is this? Sorry to say, I'm like warning that is on 90 seconds.
Surfing Thermals, I wrote just outside of my cottage garden looking up. There's loads of birds of prey. And it's gradually getting more since I've been here. And you look up and then they just bat up and then they just glide about on their wings. And they just glide. And you can watch them for 10 or 15 minutes and they don't do one flip of their wings. Mm. And that's what inspired this piece. Surfing Thermals is the birds surfing their thermal wins. It's not about underwear.
Cool. I'm really glad we clarified because my first thought was about like ocean surfing.
Everybody has different thoughts. Underwear, Google, surfing, all these different things. Like birds of prey.
Wow. Yeah, that's funny. That makes me realize how set in my ways I am. Hannah, thank you so much. Here's the tune. Thanks for listening to the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob.